Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Our podcast production and distribution made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. 7 things to know about 529 plans. How to keep more of your ETF gains. The plus side of working longer. The right and wrong of annuities. These are talking points from recent Invest Talks. You can hear them again or for the first time on InvestTalk.com. Hear a complete replay. Just click on the Invest Talk tab on InvestTalk.com. And now, today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. I appreciate you being with me. It is Monday, June 27th, 2016. We're all about above average investing for the average investor, how we can improve your results. You know, yes, we are money managers. We would love to manage your funds for you. But if you want to learn to do it, we're going to teach you how to do it. We'll improve, at the very least, improve your results. If you listen to the show, ask your questions, and just be part of what we're doing here. Now, it's day two of the post-Brexit vote, right? Day two. We had a big down day on Friday and a big down day today, less so than Friday. And, of course, it's on everybody's mind. So we're going to talk about it a little bit today. Former U.S. Treasury Secretary Larry Summers wrote in the Financial Times, Brexit could well be the worst self-inflicted policy wound by G7 countries at the formation of the G7 40 years ago. So he thinks it's a terrible idea. Uncertainty is the major issue, and I agree with that. It's the uncertainty that this causes is really the biggest problem. And how much, what do we mean by that? Well, this EU obviously is not a very strong union, and there's other members of the union are going to think about doing the same thing. In the short term, I think things look pretty bad. They do. The sell-off that we've had spread to Japan's Nikkei, South Korea's Kospi, and Australia's ASX. All these indexes. Germany's DAX dropped 6%, their index. So the markets around the world have fallen. Now, that drop in and of itself is not that meaningful, other than that there's implications from the big sell-off. And the implications are probably the UK economy is going to go into recession. Remember, London was a big hub of global financial strength. And I was just reading an article today that, when you go to London, you get your, from a financial point of view, you go to London, you have a bank in London, and you get business approved to do in London. And once it's approved to do in the EU country of England, you can now do business in all the EU countries. Well, that ain't going to work now. And, London was a big financial center. So where's all the money going that's leaving all these markets? Well, U.S. dollar, treasury bills and bonds, gold. So is this a buying opportunity now to get into the London market? How about our market? Is it time to do that? I'm going to say no, not yet. Got to wait. There will be a bounce. I mean, it could be tomorrow. It could be next week. It could be next month. It could be any time. But, I think we need to wait to see some more fallout, to see what the fallout's going to be. You want to be patient. There's no big rush to try to pick up some bargains yet. You can reach me right now on our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHARTERS, our anytime number. Let's answer a question.
Hi, I'm reading this FINRA ruling stating that a broker-dealer cannot promote the safety of a mutual fund over any other type of security. But it's pretty obvious that, a money market fund, for example, would be typically safer than, for example, in a volatile, technology stock. I don't know if there's maybe some leeway around recommending funds in cases where they clearly are safer options, but I don't know if there's a workaround or what. I look forward to your answer, and thank you so much for your show.
Well, as money managers, you've got to be really, really careful when you talk about recommending something that is safe or safer, because the definition is pretty cloudy. Safe. What's safe? Even cash, is that safe? Well, you've got, inflation risk. Everything has risk. And so what the ruling's trying to do is give actually consumers some protection by making money managers and fund managers and everybody else be very, very careful when they talk about the word safe and safety. Notice how careful I am on the radio. When someone calls me up, is this safe? Or is this a safe stock? And I always say, no. The word safe, you can't use that in the market. You really can't use it. You can say, well, is one equity safer than the other? Yes, you can say that. But notice you're not saying it's safe, it's safer. And of course, money markets are safer than an index fund, of course. But us financial people have to be very, very, very careful because we've got those rules that we have to follow. And I don't have a problem following the rules. I really don't. But we could say stuff like this is a safer bet than this, but that's really not telling you a lot, is it? So, you know, the word safe really doesn't apply to the market. It's all degrees of safety. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's try and answer one of our text question formats from the text people. Oh, hello, I am a new investor and am wanting to stick mainly with ETFs to start up. I was looking at VYM and was wondering if I could get your opinion. My time horizon is about 3 to 5 years, in which time I will graduate from college. So I'm amazed that you even have money, because usually college takes all your money. But we're talking about VYM, and of course, when the ETF starts with a V, I know it's a Vanguard fund. And VYM, I'm pretty familiar with, because it's the high dividend yield fund of theirs. And it's one on my, remember I've told you many times that we have a ETF dividend paying ETF list of, you know, 5-7 ETFs. This is one of them. It's an exchange traded fund, so you can performance corresponding to the FTSE High Dividend Yield Index, paying 3.2% dividend. This is a very solid ETF that's a bit less risky than other ETFs because of the high dividends. Still, it will go down when the market goes down. Don't think it won't. It will. I mean, in 2009, it was a low of 22. Today, it's 68. So you can see it does go down if the market goes down because it's holding stocks. Yes, big blue chip dividend paying stocks. Yeah, But it's still holding stocks. So you still got that risk there. But it's a good solid ETF for dividends. These mutual funds were formed to diversify a pool of junk bonds and reduce the risk of investing in financially struggling companies. High yield. But are they too risky? That's our main talking point today. High yield, also known as junk bonds. We'll talk about that. Also, let's take a look at, I want to talk about, before the end of the show, about the market itself. Going down 2 days in a row, and what does this mean? Is there panic selling going on? What's happening? And also, another point about the Brexit, I want to talk about the recession that is likely to push Britain into. Could it spread that recession? And the advantages and disadvantages of ETFs. Everybody knows about the advantages. Very few people pay attention to the disadvantages. And the disadvantages of the ETFs are kind of hidden. It's kind of hard to see them. So I just wanted to make sure we talk about those, as well as the advantages. There are a lot of advantages, and most people know about them. Those are things that I'm going to talk about, unless you want to talk about something else specifically. Be happy to do that. The Dow was down 260 points. The NASDAQ 113, and the S&P down 37. So we've had two pretty significant big down days. And what it's interesting, it is the major indexes have broken their 200-day moving average. Do you know why that's significant? From a technical point of view, technical meaning reading charts, the tend to be true charts when something happens, tends to be true, but it's not always true. You know, when everybody reads charts and say, okay, the chart says it's going to do this, that doesn't mean it has to happen. Chart reading is not a science. It's an art. It just tends to happen because it always, you know, because it consistently happens a certain way, but it doesn't have to. So just always bear that in mind when people are talking about technical analysis. Our program is brought to you by KPP Financial. We offer a variety of carefully designed investment programs designed to meet a range of needs and retirement goals. I'll be talking to a number of people over the next couple of days in the Bay Area about these types of programs I have. And if you'd like to know more about them, just click on the Investments tab on InvestTalk.com. Chart 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Cherie in Vermont. How you doing? Fremont. Hi, Cherie. How you doing?
Okay, don't send me across the country to Vermont.
Vermont, all the way on the other side. Sorry.
Hey, I have a question. In today's market, the market went down, mm-hmm. and normally when market goes down, VIX goes up.
Yeah.
But today even VIX went down. So how you explain this kind of strange behavior?
It's interesting because that's going to be one of my talking points today. The two sharp down days is the market over? And looking at the VIX, what you're seeing there, Cherie, is a lack of panic, even though the market is falling really sharply. Remember, the VIX is, of course, we know it's called the fear gauge. When everybody gets fearful, it spikes. And it did spike on Friday. It spiked heavily. But today, it fell because people didn't fear the market. There's no panic selling. It's not fear throughout the market. It's just fear of holding on to positions. But you don't see any panic selling. And the Dow and the S&P are below the 200-day moving average, but you still don't see panic selling. What you see is the VIX is telling you that much of the market is not too worried about this. So I have a feeling we're going to be pretty close to the end of this fall. I don't think it's going to be very hard. The VIX hasn't shown enough fear yet.
So the VIX normally projects what's going to be expected like the next 4 weeks, kind of a picture what may be coming. And now we are saying the VIX is really going down. That means this correction or this market going down, is that kind of a...
It may not last very long.
Market may turn around?
I think if the VIX is saying... And the VIX could be wrong, Cherie. Don't think it's infallible. It's not. But right now it's telling you... is telling us, I think, that the fall is probably going to slow down really fast and then stop falling in the next day, 2 days, 3 days. Until it spikes back up, I think you're going to see the market calm down. That's what I think it's trying to tell us.
In fact, if you'll see the futures after market, they are up. They're not down. So tomorrow may be a different day.
Yeah, it might be an up day tomorrow.
Okay.
Thanks, Cherie.
Right.
Appreciate the call. None of this, we're talking about technicals, everybody, and the VIX is the volatility index. And usually it spikes up when there's fear, and it falls when there's a lack of fear. And it stays low for long periods of time, and then spikes up when there's fear. And it spiked, the big spike it did last September went from, the VIX went from like 12 and a half to like 52 in a week. Now, the most recent 2 days, it was, on Friday, Thursday, it was like around, 17 and a half, 18, and now it's 23. So you can see it's very fast moving. But today it went down 7%, 7.4% today after the spike on Friday. And usually when the market's going down, fear is building, and the market still went down today. Fear didn't seem to be building. And that's what we're talking about, Cherie and I. Feels like there's not a lot of fear in the market. Now, of course, that could change in a heartbeat. We all know that can change really fast, right? So it doesn't mean that it can't turn around and spike tomorrow. It could. But, the odds are the market's going to calm down. That's what the odds are. We're here to help every person make more informed decisions about their money. And we try to be straightforward with our opinions. And whether it's buying, selling stocks, or real estate, we're here to help you solve your money challenges. At least that's our goal. Answer questions and maybe help you ask the right questions. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. You can reach us directly. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time every weekday. So let's talk about high-yield bonds. Are they too risky? Are high-yield bonds too risky? First, we've got to know what a high-yield bond is. The bonds, people look at bonds and think that they're fairly safe because they're going to pay you, but give your money back after the bond maturity date and plus interest along the way until you do get the money back. And that is all true. Now, what is high risk? You know, high yield. Always when you hear high yield, you want to associate that with higher risk than a regular bond. High yield means higher risk. And they also, a lot of times, they use the word junk, junk bonds. Junk is probably a misnomer. It's not junk. It's just poorly rated. And when they talk about how they determine whether a bond is junk or high yield versus investment grade, which is, you know, better quality, there's two rating agencies out there that rate the bonds. Two rating agencies. One's Moody's and the other is S&P. Okay? So how do we know these two companies rate the bonds? AAA, AA, single A, triple B, B plus, you know, on and on and on they have ratings. Well, there's a certain level where below that rating is junk and above it is investment grade. And it's either double B for one group or I think it's BA for the other. So you got to understand who's rating it and whether or not it's good or bad. Okay, I'm trying not to get too detailed on this, but the rating agencies decide whether it's junk or not junk. And many times, like Ford has had junk ratings. The big blue chip companies can get junk ratings every so often. Why? Well, because GM actually did go out of business, remember? So they had too much debt. And then they had the financial crisis. So don't think that big, solid companies won't be junk. They can be. But more commonly, it's the weaker companies. And yes, you get a higher yield when you buy the bond. You can get pretty decent yields, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9%. But historically, the high yields in junk bonds today are pretty low compared to previous 10, 20, 30 years ago. The yields are low comparative to history because interest rates are so very low. But the risk, the default risk, is not low. It's the same. So now you're buying junk bonds, getting a lot less yield for them because people can't get yield anywhere else, and you're buying the same risk. So yes, I think they're risky. I think they're pretty risky. So you got to be kind of know what you do. You got to know what you're doing. You just can't just go out and buy because you think the yield is good. Oh, I like that yield. It's paying me. You know, talk to those people who bought Puerto Rican bonds. How was their high yields? And Puerto Rican bond had a low quality bonds. Hey, paying 8, 9, 10%. Everybody thought, oh, Puerto Rico, they're going to be around. They're not. What do they do? Default on them. So be very careful. Job number one on InvestTalk is always answering questions. Our 24-hour listener line is always open. Any money question is fine.
Hi, guys. I'm calling in with a question on the stock Gilead. GILD is the symbol. Wanted to get your opinion on the stock and what would be a good entry point and what you think of the stock overall in the future. I will be listening to your show for the answer. I want to say thanks for your opinion and really enjoy the show. Thanks. Bye.
Well, Gilead is a very good company hitting hard times right now, and they're still falling. So it looked like they had lots and lots of support right around $80 or so, and it broke that the last couple of days. So now we don't know how far down it's going to go. If you don't own it, you don't buy it. You do not buy it yet. They're going to make $12.33 next year. It's a $78 stock. Pretty darn cheap. The five-year P.E. ratio is 6 to 37, and then right now it's 6. It's a really cheap stock. Now, why? Well, they have bad publicity, on certain things a few months ago, and you have to read those articles. You'll find out why. But another reason is 2 years ago, they were growing 136%. Sales per quarter, over 100% for three quarters in a row. Last quarter, the most recent quarter, they grew 3%. Quarter before that, 16%. Quarter before that, 37%. It's going in the wrong direction. Investors, remember when we tell you that, you know, when you're talking about a high growth stock and the growth starts to taper off and not meet expectations, the stocks get killed. And that's what happened to Gilead. Their growth started to fall and the stock is getting killed. It's now way overdone. I will agree that. I agree that the sell-off is overdone. But you're going to have to wait to see where the bottom settles in at. So don't buy it yet. But it is a good, solid company. And they still have, you know, they have problems. You really got to read up on the issues of their drugs and why this is happening to them. And pay attention to how much money they make on just a very few drugs. That's an issue. That's a problem. Now's the time to call with your question or share your investing experience. Call anytime on our line. It's called anytime number, 888-99-CHART. Or you can send me a note directly if you like. Click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com.
We thank you for subscribing. Join our InvestTalk insiders and gain access to a whole range of special reports and one-page info sheets on important money topics like managing a bond portfolio. Fixed income offers a lot of value points that equities do not. Read all about it. Become an InvestTalk insider on InvestTalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab. Continue now with this Monday, June 27th, Invest Talk. Risk is one of the key measurements of a wise investment strategy. Measure your risk tolerance and see if your portfolio fits you. Use our award-winning and free risk analysis tool. It's online on investtalk.com.
Hello, Steve and Justin. I have a question regarding the stock Apple, AAPL. I've been waiting to on the sidelines to get in to the stock and wanted to see if this would be a good entry point now. Wanted to see also if it would be okay to use as a trading stock. Wanted to see what your thoughts are on the thoughts now on the stock now. Thank you.
Apple, everybody knows who Apple is, and of course they fell like with the market the last couple of days, and they haven't been doing that good for the last year or so. This have not. We own Apple in our stock managed account, one of the few stocks we own. It's down to $92.04 today. They're going to make $9.05 next year. $8.26 this year. The P/E ratio is right around 10. The five-year range is 10 to 17, so it's at the low of its range. Return on equity is 46%. Cash flow is huge. They have a huge cash hoard. What is the problem? Sales. Sales were growing, you know, 20, 30%. That recently, the most recent quarter, sales fell for the first time, and I couldn't tell you when. It's a huge company, $504 billion. And when we talk sales, we're talking, you know, $50 billion in the last quarter. And this is the weakest time in the most recent quarter. It's the weakest time for Apple. So this is where you would want to buy if it can hold $90 a share. And you might want to wait a few days to see it holds. You want to wait to go sideways. If it holds there, starts to move back up, it would be a good place to buy it. Now, will Apple come out with the new products and will they bring, you know, that's really the issue. What will the new products do? They came out with some software that looked pretty good, but, you know, it's a show me kind of state. Oh, how are you going to do on your next phone? What's the sales going to look like? And so, you know, that's Apple. This is a good price for it. It's fairly inexpensive, but you want to wait till it stops falling. Okay? Appreciate the call. Let's go to one of our questions that came in via that text message. Mike from Fishhook, Illinois. I'm watching Kohl's, symbol is KSS, I'm sure you know who Kohl's is. It's a retailer, operates 1,164 family-oriented specialty department stores in 49 states. Okay, so I'm watching Kohl's, KSS, closely. What do you think for a long-term buy? I know that brick and mortars are struggling of late, but I have faith the bigger companies will survive through online sales. Thanks for your insight. And you've touched on the problem for all the big box stores. And Kohl's right there with them. And that is they're competing with online sales companies, Amazons of the world. And every one of these stocks have been hit hard. Now, Kohl's is going to make $3.84 this next year, $3.99 this year, next year $3.84, then they say $3.97 for the year after. So we're talking about a stock that the earnings are flat, sales are flat, and the stock is fairly inexpensive with a 5.5% yield. It's a 10 PE with a 9 to 19 PE range. So I think this, if it can hold the number, it's like Apple. If it can hold, $32, $33 a share, it's right at $36.50. You want to see it bounce maybe? And actually, it did go up today. The market was down. It was up 94 cents. So this stock looks pretty good at this price. KSS, Kohl's, looks pretty good. Decent return on equity. But again, you're bucking the trend, and that is everything going online. And you've hit on it. They have to have an online solution, these big box stores. If they don't have it, they don't have a solution to this competition, then these companies are going to go out of business eventually. It's as simple as that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Will the vote by Britons to exit the EU, will that throw them into recession? The consensus is clearly yes. In the next year or two, they're going to be in a recession. Mostly because of the uncertainty that this has done, that this exit of the EU. No one's ever done it before. No one's quite sure how it's going to work out. Britain is a very big financial center in Europe, and that's going to change, or how's that going to change? How much is it going to change? There's a lot of fear. Are the companies going to continue to invest in their stock when they don't know how they're going to trade and sell their goods in the rest of Europe? Believe me, there's going to be a solution to all this, okay? There's no really reason to panic, but it throws out enough doubt it will slow down economic activity in England. Now, the question is, will it spread? And I mentioned on Friday that it is going to hurt our GDP. There will be a little hit to our GDP. Will it throw us into recession? No. And that hit will be between 0.2 and 0.6% on our U.S. GDP over the next year. Got to remember, when things change, and this is a big change, things change. Investors, corporations, CEOs, consumers, all take a little deep breath to see what's going to happen. And taking that deep breath and pausing in their economic activity causes a slowdown in economics, slowdown in governments, slowdown in economies, slowdown in countries. Okay, so the impact in England is going to be pretty sharp. Long term, it'll be fine. Short term, it's going to be painful. You can see my book, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor, and many others in our recommended books section on investtalk.com, like Warren Buffett's three favorite books, A Guide to the Intelligent Investor, Security Analysis, and The Wealth of Nations. Have you ever tried to read The Wealth of Nations? I got it right here on my desk. I read it between breaks on the show, and I've been reading it for a number of years, and I'm not through it. It's a big book, but it's a great book. It's really good. But we have a lot of recommended books on our investtalk.com. Take a look.
Now, InvestTalk Real Estate. Chevy Akison, real estate agent and investor, speaks with Justin Klein about staging your home for best appeal.
So after a seller fixes up any problem areas of the home, what do you advise clients about staging their home so that when prospective buyers walk into it, they get a good feel and they actually hopefully fall in love with that home.
So that's a great question. You know, we've talked about the three pillars of selling a property in the past. Number one, getting home ready to sell. Number two, getting it the right exposure. And number three, pricing it properly, right? Well, a big part of number one and getting the home ready to sell beyond remodeling is staging. Like we've talked about, a lot of times buyers, you know, don't necessarily have the vision. We've worked with buyers that have seen the same exact floor plan. One was staged, one wasn't. Everything else was pretty similar, and they didn't even recognize that it was the same floor plan. And as a result, that buyer was willing to pay a huge premium for the staged home versus the non-staged home. So I am a firm believer in staging properties. But it is very neighborhood specific. Some neighborhoods don't need it, but a majority of the time, the seller is going to sell their home faster and for more money in a quicker and more convenient time by being able to negotiate terms. You know, a lot of times today, because sellers have a lot of equity again, they need to sell their property to buy something else. So, you know, moving furniture out, moving some new furniture in, having competing buyers competing for their property, not only will potentially get them the most amount of money for their house, but it'll give them more flexible terms. We have a lot of buyers right now that are able to lease their property back for up to 60 days, sometimes longer, in order to find the next property by having the right staging and having the emotional buyer that's willing to agree to the terms and the price that we need for our sellers.
If you have a question, 888-99-CHART is the number to call or contact KPP's own licensed realtor and financial advisor, Justin Klein. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
ETFs, advantages and disadvantages. And, you know, the advantages are pretty obvious. You get exposure to groups of equities or sectors or different styles. Okay, so that's one of the advantages in ETF. Also, the lower fees when they're passively managed ETFs, and most ETFs are passively managed. You know, they're not actively managed. And so you have lower fees. And they trade like stocks where you can buy them intraday. So those are kind of, there's more advantages like automatic reinvestment and dividends, and there's other advantages. But no one really talks about the disadvantages of them. Now, got to remember, most ETFs are non-managed. So they're following or tracking a group of stocks or an index or, you know, commodity, something. They're usually just a passively managed thing. And that's not bad, but it's not actively managed. So there's not going to be any protection of a downsized move. The bid and ask spread can be very large in ETF. And most people out there are probably saying, what the heck is he talking about? The bid and ask, when you try to buy an ETF, you know, you buy it and there's someone who's selling it and the spread could be high. In other words, you're paying more than you should be paying. And there is cost. Remember, when you buy an ETF, it's traded like a stock, so you're paying a commission. So you have the commission, okay? You have a commission to buy and sell it, and it has an expense ratio, like a mutual fund. So if you trade them a lot, you could get eaten up by a lot of fees that you're not seeing. Also, everybody's been in love with leveraged ETFs, the 2 and 3 times of the underlying index. To, you know, you can buy short, you can buy long, you can do different things. And you can, and I've talked about it before, and I don't know if anybody really gets it, how when you buy a leveraged fund, it doesn't track the underlying index, okay? You know, there's some information out there that the leverage just can't keep up. If let's say an ETF is 200% leveraged and it sells for $100 a share and it goes down 10% today, okay? So you're thinking then that will go down 20% because it's 200% leverage, right? Now it's down to $80 a share. The very next day, it goes up 20%. Okay, 20%. Well, 20% on 80 is a lot different than 20% on 100. And so now you've got that problem where it has to go higher than that 20%. And that is not what we're talking about when we're talking about a tracking error. What a tracking error could be, if the underlying equity goes down 20%, that leverage ETF could go down 22% or go down 18%. It may not track. Exactly. And the opposite is true on the upside. Excuse me. So I'm trying to demonstrate that it could get really out of whack to the index that you think you're tracking. It, you know, every day could be moving in the wrong direction, and over 6 weeks, 6 months, a year, it'd be way, way off. The underlying index could be up 20%, and you could be flat, even though you're a 200% leverage. That could happen. So you've got to be careful of the tracking error. Now, whether you're an experienced investor or you're just beginning this investment journey, we're just a phone call away. You can call anytime you want, 888-99-CHART. If you're a podcast listener and can't reach us during the live program, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, you can record your question. Just record it anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Steve. My name is John. I'm from Florida. I just had a question about a company. It's called Williams Company, symbol WMB. It's pretty low right now, and their dividends are really high. I was wondering if they can maintain this absurd dividend that they're giving to their holders, and I was wondering if I should get in right now while it's low. Love your podcast. Thank you for all your help, and have a great day.
Okay, well, let's look at it. It's Williams Companies engaged in gathering, processing, storage, fractionation, and transportation of natural gas in the U.S. and Canada. Okay? That's what they do. A good, solid business. They're going to make 75 cents this year. Okay? Last year, they made 54 cents. Next year, they're scheduled to make $1.37. Meanwhile, sales have been falling. 3% in the most recent quarter, 6% the quarter after that, 13%. So it looks like the falling sales are starting to turn around, probably because natural gas is starting to turn around. They have huge debt, very large debt. They're going to make $1.37. It's a $20 stock. And you asked about the dividend. The dividend is 12.8% right now. How are they going to do that? The return on equity is only 5%. How are they going to pay 12%, almost 13% dividend on a $20 stock? Let's make it simple. Let's say they're going to pay 10%. 10% dividend on a $20 stock is $2 a share. So they're going to pay $2 a year per share in dividend if they pay a 10% yield. They only make $1.37. That's next year. This year, they're only making 75 cents. How are they going to pay $2? How? Well, one way is to borrow the money, and they have huge debt. They're going to borrow more money? I don't like that. I don't see how they can maintain that dividend. At some point, there's going to have a problem, you know, that they can't. And they've been increasing the dividend all the time, but I don't know how they're going to keep it up. Makes me pretty nervous. I like the business. I just don't know about their finances. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. And we have time to get your question in before the hour's up. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, my name is Ryan. I'm calling from San Diego, and I listen to you on podcast. Just have a question about how you read moving averages. I on some of the online resources I use, whether it's Yahoo or MSNBC or Google, you can adjust kind of the reading of the moving average by looking at a different, whether you're looking at a day, a year, a six-month interval, a three-month interval for a given security. So I'm not completely sure how you're finding the moving averages. It's probably pretty obvious once I'm pointing in the right direction, though. Thank you.
Okay, let's talk about that. Moving average, you're talking about that's technical analysis versus fundamental analysis. Fundamental is looking at the numbers of the company, the earnings, sales. Technical is just looking at the movement of the stock price over a period of time. And the basic chart that most experts start with is a one-year daily movement of the stock price. So for over one full year, the daily movement of the stock price. Okay? Now, in using that chart, most of us put in 20-day, 50-day, 100-day, and 200-day moving averages, four different moving averages. And we play with it from there. Now, a moving average is nothing but adding up, you know, it's a adding up, if it's a 20-day moving average, adding up 20 days, divide the price, add it up, and divide it by 20, and plot a dot. And then the next day, you drop off the oldest day, add the new day, add up the 20 days worth of price, divide it by 20, and plot another dot. And pretty soon you're moving along, and it's developing a line, 20-day moving average line. So that's how they are derived. But that would be what we call a simple moving average. We may want to use a different kind, and not a simple moving average, but maybe an exponential moving average, where they're put more weight on the most recent price of the stock and less weight on the old price. Then you can say, well, we're going to take the price at the end of the day of the stock, because stocks move up and down during the day. Well, I kind of like the open, high, low, close, those four numbers divided by four, and then I get the price for that day. Then I apply the moving average. See, so it can get pretty complex. And I'm just giving you the simple stuff here. But for you to start, use a one-day moving average over a one-year period, okay? Then use a 20-day, a 50-day, a 100-day, and a 200-day moving average. Okay, that's where you start. And try to look for patterns. Look for commonalities. Look for something that repeats. Okay, and also remember that chart reading is not a science, it's an art. Not a science, it's an art. On Friday, I never did get to living comfortable in retirement. There was a survey, 69% say they are living comfortable in retirement. We're talking about retirees as they are today. And that's up from 62% in 2013. Now, what they didn't make clear was the definition of living comfortable. Do you have no debt or do you have debt? They just asked the question, single or married? Now, I know other surveys show that married retired couples are happier than single persons in retirement. Are you living with children? Are you living by yourself? And where in the U.S. are these people that are comfortable, you know, in retirement? I'll tell you what, it's going to be very difficult to be comfortable in retirement in certain parts of this country where it's very expensive to live. San Jose, the Silicon Valley area, Orange County where I am, places on the East Coast, New York, you know, outside places. Who in the world can afford to live in New York City or Chicago? You know, because it's so expensive to live comfortably in retirement. Can you live? Yes, but we're talking about comfortably. And they didn't ask these questions. All they did was say, all we know is that there's more people more comfortable in retirement than they were in 2013. So I would like them to take that survey, that very same survey, and do it in the depths of the next recession, and what will they say? So what about you? You, for you particularly, you're going to have to decide, where do I want to live and how can I live there comfortably? And that takes some work. It's not just that simple. You just can't say, well, this is where I'm going to live. You got to figure it out. Time to close up for the day. If you'd like to schedule a portfolio checkup with me, I'll be in San Ramon for individual retirement reviews tomorrow, the 28th, and I'll be in San Jose the next day, but it's all booked up. I think I have one slot open tomorrow. We'll be setting up a new date for next month, so don't hesitate if you still want to meet with me. I'm there quite often, but we can still do it. To get on the schedule for tomorrow, or just to want to get on a schedule to meet with me, go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And with Justin Klein and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today, and maybe we can do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.